Cool beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals once again it is 8 p.m. on Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? We are the only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host tonight, Greg Audell, and alongside a team drenched in talent, Drs. Hank Rubicek, Warren Holloman, and Mary Edgerton.
It's been a long day.
Yeah,
it's all right.
And our irreplaceable medium maven and engineer, Tatiana Gago, who's responsible for sending our voices out over the airways, and of course, Floyd the Wonder Dog. We celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls before returning us safely and gently to the present. Tonight, we continue our KPFT's Winter Fun Drive, a time when you tell us that you like what we do and that we should keep doing it. As Pacifica, we are all about listener sponsorship, and in a world where free speech is sometimes questioned, KPFT is more important than ever, and you never hear fake news on KPFT. So give us a call right now during the program at 713-526-5738 to show the world you are an active story listener and pledge your generous donation to one of our steadfast volunteers who are sitting there eagerly waiting to speak with you. I'll thank you on air with your first name unless you would prefer us not. And if you don't like the phone, don't want to talk to one of our eager volunteers, then it is so easy to go to kpft.org. Just click on donations, choose a form of payment, and scroll to So What's Your Story as the show you wish to sponsor. That's really important, friends. And then click your donation, and it will come right through to us, and we will mention you on air. We are a Houston first, and we aim to be around for a very, very long time. We have been here 10 years now. That is hard to believe. Now, the station has been here for nearing on 50 years. We're getting close to that point, but the show, So What's Your Story, has been here 10 years. I can't believe that. We have over 450 episodes. We're planning something special for our 500th episode, but you'll hear more about that in the weeks to come. We've seen what happens when people don't vote. Remember that. So please vote for us with your generous contribution by giving us a call at 713-526-5738 or jam KPFT. I want to start with a wonderful storyteller we have with us this evening. Laura Campbell is an American short story writer and a novelist. She is best known for her speculative fiction, which includes science fiction, horror, and dark fiction. And these are genres we don't typically feature, which I'm really excited about. It's fun to get something, you know, off the beaten path a bit from what we normally do. She has lived on both the West Coast and the East Coast, but has found her home on the Gulf Coast, living and writing in one of the world's creative hotspots, that is Houston, Texas. She is married and has two children. And as with many of us, Laura was educated at the University of Houston system, earning a doctorate in law and a master's of law in health law from the prestigious University of Houston Law Center, my alma mater. In addition to fiction, she has been an author on medical journal articles and legal notes, and she won the 2007 James B. Baker Award for short story for her science fiction tale. Is it 416175?
That's it.
All right. To date, she has had over 36 short stories sold and 2 novels. I have a lot to learn from this guest, and I think our listeners will as well. Laura Campbell, welcome to So What's Your Story?
It's my pleasure to be here.
I am so excited to have you here tonight, and I've been looking over your stories, and I'm like, wow, this is a successful author.
Thank you. It's an adventure. It's a lot of fun. It's a passion I've had my entire life, and it's something I do for the love of it, and the fact that I have things out there being published, et cetera, is just icing on the cake.
Well, and I think most people, and a couple of years ago I would include me in this, had no idea what the life of a writer really was. You know, it's so much more than writing. We're going to talk about this with one of your later stories, just the path from creating the idea to writing it. And people think then you're done.
No.
And you just mail it off, and then they publish it and send you a big check. But that's not exactly how it happens, is it?
No. It's a labor of love. You start, you write, you revise, you respond. You get used to a lot of rejection. It is definitely not a pastime for the thin-skinned. I mean, you do get a lot of...
You cannot base your worth on whether or not you get a rejection slip or not.
Oh, no. I mean, because the way I always look at it is I could be making the best taco in the world, but the donut shop isn't interested in buying it, you know, so...
That's very well said. That is very well said. And I guess also the particular editor that's reading it, just what's going on with them that day.
Exactly. And actually, it's interesting you say that, because some of my best responses have actually come in the form of rejections where, you know, somebody will say it's not right for us right now, but it's wonderful and we love it. And, you know, it's going to stick with me. I had once a rejection that came through, and the editor was like, please remember my name, write it down, and call me when they make a movie of this. So,
well, and as nice as that is, isn't it also kind of irritating?
Yes.
You're like, well, if you think it's so wonderful, just publish it and send me a check.
Right. It is. But then, you know, you'll turn around and it will get published someplace else. And that particular story was actually placed in an anthology about 2 years ago. And
wow.
So, yeah, I mean, you do sometimes turn right around and see publication.
Are you familiar with poetry.org, the Poetry Foundation?
No.
I believe it was Ruth DuPont, who was an heir to the DuPont fortune. Mm-hmm. And the Poetry Foundation had been run for years on a $50,000 a year budget. And when she died, she left them $100 million. And the reason was because they rejected one of her poems, but they sent her a two-page nice letter saying, you know, how wonderful it was, even though it wasn't right for their publication. That was a good lesson right there.
It is.
So many celebrities have younger brothers and sisters who, you know, want to find their way, have to find their way to their own career path, despite the glow of their siblings' fame. And you have a story about one such sibling. Would you share it with us?
I do. This is called Old Graveyard Magic, and I will go ahead and get started. While his brother may ride a pale horse, Death's youngest sibling prefers a John Deere. Here in the Heartland, Azrael Bob, or Bubba as his friends call him, enjoys a simple life. His brother's high-stakes career in Death has brought fame to the family, but it hasn't spoiled Bubba. He prefers to reap corn, not human souls, and his favorite tool is a state-of-the-art combine, not an old-fashioned scythe. My brother is the traditional type, he explains as he sits on his front porch. There's no change in his mind once he's committed to something. He laughs softly. Yeah, we always said that he was the grim reaper and I was the happy one. It was while sitting on another porch last year at the family's annual reunion that Bubba had his inspiration. We were talking about all the commotion my brother brews up, and I thought, well, why don't I brew up some of my own? And that's what he did, literally. I went from the still to microbrewing in about a week, Bubba recollects fondly. Soon he was producing a distinct handcrafted beer, and he named his custom suds Old Graveyard. He confesses that being Death's younger brother has helped open some doors. Old Graveyard is brewed using water from the River Styx, he explains, the deepest natural source of spring water you'll ever find. But Bubba gets back to business quickly. Seriously, I'm adding a light version of the beer next spring. Not many people have an appreciation for how important better health is like I do. And why a beer? It's not entirely original, he concedes. But if there is one thing being in this family has taught me, it's that old fads never die. The brewing takes place off-site, but Bubba runs the business from home. You have to watch your head in this business, he said. There is a wide grin on his face most of the time, emphasized by a four-tooth gap in his upper jaw. He keeps his books in a small office set up in an abandoned shed by a rusting old muscle car set up on blocks. He affectionately calls the area Camaro Alley. Sunlight streams through the spaces between the shed's boards, and all that sunlight, he reckons, will only make you thirstier. He also hopes that his brewing business will regain respect for him from his family. He points to a two-headed dog running after its own tail in an overgrown corner of the lot. That dog got me in some trouble with my big brother, he sighs. My Mississippi hunting hound got a few moments alone with Cerberus, and that's the puppy they had. My brother didn't talk to me for months after that. On top of that, he says, my old repo business failed. My folks thought I was some kind of loser. My brother can claim lives, and I couldn't even reclaim a Honda Civic. So next time you have a hankering for something that will knock you out, but not permanently, you could reach for a cold old graveyard. Asriel Bob will thank you, and maybe he'll even put a good word in for you in return. And that's something we can all drink to.
Here, here, I will drink to that. Well, one thing I love in life when you get a new idea that you've never contemplated before. And I know a lot about celebrity trivia.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that Death had a younger brother. And that is an idea that never crossed my mind. How did it enter your mind?
This was actually in response to a humor call. And I wrote the story thinking there isn't a whole lot of humor slash horror out there. It's a little bit of a challenge to write humor, but I kind of thought, well, let's think of a character that otherwise would be horrific and turn that on its head. And what could we do with that? And that's when the idea kind of occurred to me. Well, we could give him that embarrassing family member that sometimes celebrities always seem to have lurking in the shadows. And Bubba was born.
Wow. Wow. Well, I love the story, and I just love the idea. You know, as we were talking about a minute ago, one of those underappreciated skills of a successful writer is persistence. Will you share with us what it took to get this story published?
It took a little bit. Like I said, this was actually in response to a humor contest call, and I sent it in, and it lost. So now I have this short humor horror piece.
And but you didn't throw the story away.
Oh, no, 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 no. Like we said before, it's just a matter of having the story find its home. And
that's a good way to put it.
Sometimes that's instant, and sometimes that can take a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years, even a couple of decades. This one took 17 months and 5 submissions to find a home. But it did in a very nice small literary journal, and that was my first experience writing humor, which is something that's, like I said, I find it the most difficult genre to write in.
I mean, didn't J.K. Rowling have something like 25 rejections on Harry Potter?
Exactly.
I mean, what if she had stopped at number 17, number 18, number 19?
Yeah, well, you just got to keep going. I mean, you believe in yourself, you believe in your story, and you keep at it. And a lot of times it may be the market, you know, and there may be a trend out there. And often popular culture can drive those trends. You know, if everybody is into dragons and wizards, then, you know.
And you might write it 2 or 3 years before that trend hits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to have it in your pocket.
It's good to have it in your pocket. And also remember that, you know, you have a wonderful story about something else, and maybe this isn't the time and the place for it. So you just keep at it. And it eventually, the stories find their place.
And speaking of messages, we want all of you to know that the message is storytelling forever on Houston Airwaves and on this show is So What's Your Story? It's the original, and we've been around for quite a while, as we've said. And we are lucky to have our show's creator, producer, and driving force, Dr. Hank Rubicek, with us. And, Hank, could you give us a little history on So What's Your Story?
I would be absolutely honored to, but I just wanted to say that we already have somebody to thank early on in the show.
We do.
Neil and Mary Early. I know them very, very well.
Thank you, Neil and Mary.
Longtime members of the Houston Storytellers Guild with a very generous donation. And they said our best to Hank and the show. And visit us at www.storiesandmore.org. So we're going to give them some PR as well.
Absolutely. And thank you all for your support.
You know, and I appreciate an opportunity to talk a little bit about this program. Because, you know, in 2008, I was a guest on an open journal. I don't even know what I was talking about. But whatever it was good enough that a few days later, Ernesto Aguilar, who was the program manager at the time, called and said, Hank, do you remember me? And at first I said, no. And I said, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And he said, you know, you did a pretty good job a few days ago. And the person who did your show quit. And I said, I hope it wasn't me. He says, no, she hadn't moved to Michigan. But we had
did you do something to her?
I don't know.
Has she ever been heard from
again?
Never. No comment?
But he said, you know, you sounded good. I know you've got a background in communication and radio. Would you like to do that slot? It's a 30-minute slot. And then he made it an hour. The fourth Friday of every month, open journal. And I said, yes, I'd like to do a storytelling show. And this was his exact words. I like you and it's a good idea, but I'm not sure anybody will listen. And I said, well, you know what? Okay, let's give it a shot. And we did that. And it was hard because, you know, I was getting 4 to 6 tellers on a Friday. And even though it was once a month, we were new in the scene, so it wasn't easy.
What time was it?
Well, it wasn't a bad time. It was 9 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it became worse when we went weekly, but that's another story. In any event, we did it once a month, and we got calls. And people said, you know what, Hank? Once a month isn't enough. And it really did surprise Ernesto, and he was wonderful about it. So was Dwayne Bradley. So they gave us a shot at 6 a.m. on a Monday morning. Did it for 2 years, and believe it or not, had a lot of success.
Wow.
And Chrissy's Donuts loved me down the street because I had to bribe guests to get them here at 5:15 in the morning.
I don't know if I could have made it at 5:15 in the morning.
But, you know, that's the beginning part. And as you know, Greg, you've been with us a few years. We went from Monday morning to Thursday night at 10, then to Wednesday at that coveted 8 o'clock spot. Now we're at even a better spot. At 6 o'clock, we're hovered between really a Houston institution, Wally, with Progressive Forum and Lars. With
two KPFT legends.
They really are. This is a place where DJs drop needles on tunes you're not going to hear anyplace else. It's a station that really can't ever be over-exaggerated, and we are really honored to be a part of this. But it's listener-sponsored, and people are going to have to realize that to listen to us, they got to pay for us. So tonight, to accompany Laura's great talents, we're going to listen to a few of what we consider to be some of the maybe not best stories, but a good representation of what our listeners will be listening to.
Fantastic.
So we need them to call in, 713-526-5738, JAM, KPFT, and we are listening carefully, and we want to thank you, and we want you to call now.
Very well said. Well, we have a few stories from the past of our 450 episodes to choose from. So where do we start?
Well, we're going to start with David Rainey. Now, this is an interesting story. David Rainey is a very popular alley actor. He's terrific. And he's going to tell a story that wowed our listeners. However, before he told the story, he was a nervous wreck. And when I asked him why, he said, I'm telling a story. And I said, but you're an actor. He said, oh, I'm an actor. But I don't tell stories. I tell everybody else's stories. I become other people. And it was at that moment that I realized the power of story. And Laura, I'm sure you can relate to this. You're a writer. And, you know, when you create someone else's persona, it's not always the same. In any event, I'm going to shut up and let you listen to this story. This really did wow the listeners. Tatiana, please.
I often wonder why it is that certain childhood memories have stuck with me throughout my life. But there are a few that stand out, probably because of their freshness to me as experiences. And most of these lingering memories of my youth center around my little sister. There were three of us, she being the youngest and the only girl. My dad spent his life in the Air Force. After I was born, he was transferred to Cannon Air Force Base in Clovis, New Mexico. And so, soon he bought a house in the old section of town. It was a big house, and it sat on the corner of the block. The back door opened up into a driveway lined with two long rows of bricks to keep the car from sinking into the mud when it rained. Which came up along the street from the back of the house to a tiny porch of an efficiency apartment that came with the house. This particular day, my mom was overwhelmed with too many things to do. She was trying to wrangle three kids while cooking and fielding phone calls. For probably 15 or 20 minutes, she'd been trying to get us out of the house for some appointment she had. Part of the delay was that we couldn't find our new puppy, which we had only for maybe a couple of weeks. I don't remember if it was a male or female, but I do remember it was cute. And it was had a soft, medium brown coat and floppy ears and bounding energy and puppy breath. It was the first dog for us kids, and we were thrilled to have it. My mom finally said that we had to go, and we'd look for it when we got back. She piled us into the car, and we were off. We got to the end of the driveway, and my mom suddenly stopped the car. There, where the car had been, was the puppy lying lifeless on his side. The puppy didn't get crushed, but it was dead. Killed. Leaving the car where it was, she had us get out, and she went inside probably to cancel whatever appointment she had. And then I remember my sister went and got her wagon. She could have been more than three or four years old at the time. The puppy would often sit in the wagon and let her pull it along the broken sidewalks around her house. So she went to the puppy and set it up in the wagon. And then she pulled it a few feet. But when she looked back, she noticed that it was lying down. So she went back and tried to stand it up again. And then she would pull it a few feet and look back and then try to stand it up. I watched her for a long time doing this. And I guess it stuck with me all these years because it was strange to me to realize that she just didn't know and couldn't comprehend what happened. Now, years have passed since the puppy incident when we found out that my mom was expecting a baby. It was a fresh idea since we were all old enough to understand what this would mean. There was much excitement around the thought of someone new in our lives starting from scratch. My sister, of course, took to fantasizing about the new addition. Being a girl and the youngest, she was particularly captivated by the idea, especially when she found out that it was going to be a girl. Perhaps it was a newfound sense of responsibility that came from being elevated from the youngest child to the oldest girl, or excitement from the fact that she would no longer be the only girl in the family. But it set her in a whirlwind of preparation. She was always talking about what she was planning on doing and how she was going to help with this task or that and how she was going to be the big sister to her little sister. Finally, the time came for my mom to go off to the hospital. We all wanted to go, but they made us stay at home. And finally, after what seemed like days, they told us that the baby was born. But there were complications. Time passed, and every day brought with it new uncertainty about when the baby and my mother would be coming home. My sister was very anxious, but we all believed that it would be okay in the end. Our newborn baby girl hung on for 11 anxious days. My mom finally came home, and we were told that the baby didn't make it. This time, my sister did understand what happened. And the memory that lingers most vividly for me is all of us around the dinner table with nothing to say, surrounded by the whimpering sobs of my sister who couldn't stop crying. She'd been crying for what seemed like days. She had invested so much in anticipation of this new life that would transform her world. The sadness was overwhelming to her, and she couldn't quite come to terms with her feelings of grief and newfound sense of loss that was all so very final. In that moment, around the table, all those dreams and plans and hopes for what was to come were not yet ready to find their resting place. My mother finally asked my sister if she would like to go to her room. She said yes, and left the table with the sound of her sobs trailing behind her. The dining room was quiet then, except for careful forks on plates and glasses coming to rest. I don't remember how dinner ended. That didn't stick with me. But the loss of that my sister felt was an unshakable memory that stays vividly in my mind.
I know we're all dog people. We love it. But I need you to understand that we always talk about the fact that that story stretched the boundaries of the human heart. The fact that his sister understood loss because of giving life to that puppy is the kind of inextricable connection that you can't find anywhere else. And despite the fact that it's a sad story, that was a story that yielded so many calls. People
it was powerful.
To know. People wanted to know. And it, you know, sometimes powerful stories are obviously not those easy to listen to. You know, the next story, we're kind of going from going from someone really seasoned as a talented communicator, maybe not so much a storyteller, to someone who said he didn't have a story to tell. His name was Miguel Rodriguez. He was a student of mine. And this is a very warm story because he said that he always had a hard time talking about this, but he really wanted to talk about it on this show. And he told this story on the show for the very first time. It's simple, it's honest, and it's raw.
We all know that when tragedies happen, they happen in pair of threes. Well, one day in sunny California, as I'm going into Camp Pendleton, I was a Marine. I'm going into work, and everything was fine. Then I receive a phone call from my cousin and says, Grandpa is dead. And I couldn't believe it because I never thought something of such tragedy can happen to me. Well, I felt pretty down, and I tried to go up my chain of command so I can go to Mexico to see the for the burial of my grandfather. Well, due to the area that it was in, I wasn't able to go, so I was pretty let down. Later that day, around 16:30, as we all know, 4:30, I'm going home, and I lived with a fellow Marine. And as I walked in, he knew something was wrong. And at that point, I received another phone call. And it's from my sister. Me and her never had a great relationship. All she said was, "Dad's been shot. Dad's been shot." And then hangs up. I call her back so many times, and finally she answers and says, "I'm sorry, but Dad was working on his work truck when two gentlemen just went into the driveway, shot three times, and one bullet hit his chest. We don't know what his condition is, but he might still live. The bullet hit his chest and hit the lighter. My dad is a smoker." And at that time, my friend, he heard that conversation, and he said, "Not as a Marine, but as a friend, you need to go home and see your father, because you might not have another chance to see him and forgive him." Well, immediately after that, I called my chain of command, and I was on the next plane to here to Houston. As I'm on the plane, a lot of memories are going through my head about my father, and me and my dad never saw eye to eye, and he was never around. But there was this one memory that came to mind that is very special to me. In boot camp, we have no form of communication but writing letters. And I used to write my grandmother and my mother a lot every day. That's all I would look forward to. And one day I received a letter from my mother saying, "Your dad would go see you graduate from boot camp." This made me very happy because my dad has never been there for me. A couple days later, I received another letter, but this time from my grandmother, saying he would not be able to make it because of work. I kind of knew to be let down, and I knew it was going to happen, and I just let it be. Well, graduation came, and the graduation ceremony went on, and we graduated, and said, "You are now United States Marines." So as I'm leaving, and I'm going to get my bags, there's this one nickname that my father calls me, and it's Mike Tyson. He's always called me this for some reason, and I've never forgotten it. As I'm going to go get my bags, I hear it from the back. I hear it, "Mike Tyson, Mike Tyson." I think nothing of it. I keep walking. I hear it again. And this time, I feel his arm on my shoulder. And as I turn around, there he was. It was the proudest moment of my life because he's never been there for such an amazing moment that was happening in my life. Well, I finally arrived here in Houston, and I'm going to the hospital, and I finally get to my father, and we talk, and we say what we had to say to each other, and as I'm leaving, he says, "Mike, you didn't have to come," and I turn around and say, "Yes, I do, because I love you."
Wow. Hank, you're putting us through the ringer tonight.
Anybody want to not listen to that every week? Because wow. If you don't send us your donations, that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to hear silence, and this is no hyperbole. We need you to give us a call at 713-526-5738 because that is literally what you're paying for. You're listening to the kind of connection with the community that you're never going to find anywhere else. Period.
What that story makes me think about is some of the most profound stories we have had on this program have been from tellers who have said, I don't have a story to tell.
Right.
I can't tell a story.
Right.
I certainly can't tell it on the radio.
Right.
They come in, they start talking, and they go to another place. And one that comes to mind is Sylvia Jason, who mm-hmm. told the story about being a child in Chile during the revolution and watching right. her father and, I believe, uncle or older brother being taken away. Her husband of 20-some-odd years was in the control room, and he had tears in his eyes, and he said, "I've been married to her for over 20 years. I've never heard that story."
Yeah.
And that, I feel, is one of the great powers of our program. We bring everyone from the novice to the very experienced writer like we have tonight, and they all take us somewhere new. And as Hank says, they transport us somewhere, but bring us safely back into our lives. So if you value these stories, please do call 713-526-5738. 526-5738, and let KPFT and Pacifica know that you value the program that you're listening to. This is Greg Audell with Tatiana Gago and our guest tonight, Laura Campbell, and Hank Rubicek, and Floyd the Wonder Dog. And you're enjoying the stories, new and old. We have a handful of special stories from our decade-long history with So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. And we have a very special gift from one of our most special contributors, Mr. or Ms. Anonymous, who called in with a $500 pledge. That is just amazing.
We love you all. We really love you. Thank you.
That means a lot. Thank you. And lets us know that you appreciate what we're doing. And just thank you very much for thinking of us. Now, Tatiana, while I recover from that and from the stories, I know we are the best around, but we are not the only place in town to hear stories. Would you give me a chance to catch my breath and give us a report on some of the great storytelling venues around town?
It would be my pleasure. Well, let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, which is a great place to learn about the art of telling, thanks to its amazing supporting members. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. The next monthly swap will be this Tuesday, February 26th. Make that day the day you become a part of our growing community of tellers. I promise you, it'll be worth it. Be sure to visit the Guild's webpage about upcoming events, and while you're there, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under...
Every single show!
And it's all listed on the menu under radio program. There are over 450 of them, so I recommend every week you better get started. And if you don't own a radio, that's not an excuse, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and on our Facebook Live. Visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share with all of your friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave.
Please like us.
And So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. We are really all over the place.
You can't escape us.
Our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live is on the second Tuesday of the month, and that's where you're going to enjoy all of the spectacular stories. I'll be there next month. Because of spring break, the March Moth will meet on the third Tuesday, March 19th, and the theme will be blame. I promise, once you go to a Moth event, it will be one of your favorite things to do.
Absolutely.
And the So What's Your Story team also wants to hear about your program ideas or comments for anyone who wants to shoot us an email. You can shoot us an email at story@kpft.org, and I promise we will get back to you.
And, you know, some of our great guests and stories have come from, you know, our listeners sending in ideas and suggestions. And so please keep sending in those emails, and you might just hear your story or your favorite storyteller on air. And I will absolutely be at the next Moth. I have a story for Blame. But I want to take this opportunity to congratulate my fellow co-host Mary Edgerton on her win at this month's Moth Story Slam, where the theme was Love Hurts. We are so proud of you, Mary, a wonderful storyteller, and I'm just so proud to be part of your team. Now, next week, we will be honoring Black History Month. It will take center stage on So What's Your Story when Warren Holloman hosts Chris Wickliffe, a founding member of the Ensemble Theater, and its current associate artistic director, Rachel Dixon. They will be here with another set of stellar tellers only on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Now, Hank, you know Rachel. Am I correct?
I do. She was an adjunct at UHD for many years. Very, very talented person. She's been on the show before, and people are not going to want to miss her. Oh, you know what, Tatiana? It looks like you're working hard over there.
Tatiana's always working hard.
I'm looking at her right now. I just want people to know something. Tatiana works every non-penny that she earns. And you know something? When you listen on this station, don't you dare think that any of us are paid. But you know what? You don't listen in and say, well, what do you expect from programmers who aren't paid? It's lousy. Because we're not lousy. We're excellent. And you expect excellence. But that excellence has to be paid for. We have to be able to be sustained. So 713-526-5738, or get online at www.kpft.org and then donations. Get online, stay in line. I don't care if you're in a lineup. We want you to get on there and do what you can to please help us maintain storytelling lands in this city. Thank you very much.
And while no one you hear on air is paid, let me tell you, the electric company doesn't care how good we do or the public service. They want their money each and every month, no matter what. And it's expensive because we are on 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. As long as the support keeps coming in, you will never hear dead air. The one thing you don't want to hear on this station is this. That's not fun to listen to, is
it? Yeah, that's my line. I know. I love that. I got trouble once saying, hey, you're not saying anything. That's just the point. Just the point.
Now, Tatiana, would you play Julia Neese's story from December 12th?
Let's hear your story.
I was a dancer since the age of 3. I loved frolicking around the stage and moving my arms in the air. I continued dancing until I was about 6 or 7. I ended up quitting because my class was progressing at an increasingly low pace, and all I wanted to do was advance. I just couldn't find the happiness and joy within ballet anymore. My feet weren't dancing again until I was about 11. I found myself twirling around the kitchen and leaping through the hallways. My mom seemingly picked up on my hints and signed me up for a dance class. My excitement was brewing with every red X over that calendar. I couldn't wait. My first dance class was amazing. I loved learning the basics and wearing real pink ballet shoes. It was amazing. I enjoyed every step, every jump, every move. After my first semester, I considered myself a talented dancer, but I could feel my passion for dance slipping away. It was just like quitting the first time. Then my dad announced he would be taking me to see the Nutcracker by the Houston Ballet. I was nervous at first that I would be bored, but my dad had already bought the tickets, so I went. When we first walked in, I doubted myself. Why was I here again? What was my motive for doing this? Is this actually what I like? Then the spotlights flared, and the music sounded. I was in a trance. The party girls ran on stage in their gleaming satin pointe shoes, exampling the most beautiful entrance I had ever seen. I was intrigued, but it all changed when the Sugar Plum Fairy walked on stage. It felt like magic had entered the room. At that moment, watching the graceful ballerinas twirling on point, I realized this is what I need to do. Not want, but need. This is it. This is my reason for existing on this planet. Everybody else clapped at the end of the performance, but I sat stone-faced, mesmerized. My dad had to remind me to clap. In the end, that night and the whole week after, all I could think about was the Nutcracker. I quickly regained my feeling of wanting to dance. Something possessed me that night. It has changed the course of my life. I decided that not the Nutcracker, not the pretty shoes, but just being able to dance and have lessons was one of the greatest Christmas presents ever. Now I'm absolutely dedicated to dancing. I even just finished my company's own production of the Nutcracker, dancing the roles of a similar party girl and a Russian dancer. Enjoying it like I did when I sat in those amazing seats at Wortham Theater.
That's a great story. That is a beautiful story, and one that touches me because I know about the cover.
Wow, from the mouths of babes, how incredibly articulate and well-spoken and layered that story was.
Yeah, Julia is one of those remarkable students from Maryland Performing Visual Arts Middle School, the old Johnson Middle School, and we get them here every year, and they are just magnificent. You know, our kids sometimes get a bad rap, but when you listen to these kids, forget about that.
I mean, we love every guest we have on here, but there is something special about the kids that come in here.
Yeah.
You know, and their stories, I think when they started coming on, I expected more simplistic stories, but their stories are as layered as any guest we ever have.
They're
in
far
here.
Smarter than adults. Trust me, I'm a teacher.
Yeah, we do not give kids enough credit. And I'm proud of the diversity of the stories that we're able to share each and every week, from biographical stories to fiction to folk tales. Yet I don't recall having any science fiction on this show. Laura, is that something you could fix for us?
I can do that. I brought a story called Coming to Coal Station. This was actually published last fall. So it's a fairly new story. And I'll go ahead and, without any more ado, get started. Cessna could hear the train rattle by on the tracks as she sat in her chair next to the open window, sipping on inexpensive red wine poured into a little purple plastic cup. She was feeling lonely. Two deaths and one breakup in the space of the last month were taking their toll on her emotions. She was a smart girl and recognized she was still at the shock stage of grief. The counselors had told her soon she would become angry and then accepting. They had even suggested a timetable for her emotions. They were fools. How did anyone ever get over that kind of shock? The red wine and the sleeping tablets weren't helping her sleep through the night, no matter how many she took. Loss still found a way to slip into her dreams. The music slipping through the open window was enticing. She hadn't heard laughter for a while, and the train station was only a few blocks away. It was early enough in the evening that Cessna felt safe walking outside in the quiet air. So she stood up, put on a bright red jacket, and headed towards the station to see what the celebration was all about. The turnstile was open. The guard gestured her through. "Come on in," he called out cordially. She walked out onto the platform. The station was the last above-ground station before the train plunged into the underground system. It had a good concrete ceiling, but there was air overhead the above-ground section of the platform. The open-air area had been filled with colorful open umbrellas. They made a makeshift roof for the station. People milled about on the platform talking. A small band was playing enchanting jazz music just off the main platform and beside a ticket booth. She looked up. The umbrellas were all different colors. Most were multicolored, with numerous slivers of pink, orange, green, red, and baby blue fabric filtering the light. Some were more uniform in their color. Others were gray or white. The gray and white umbrellas were much smaller. She couldn't figure out what was holding the umbrellas up. Fish line must have been suspended above the station platform. There was a rumble, and the lights of the station went off for a moment. The jazz band announced they were taking a break. The people on the platform ceased talking and laughing as the sound of screeching metal wheels on metal tracks echoed through the station. The lights at the edge of the track changed to red, indicating an incoming train. An empty train, a good 12 or 14 cars long, pulled up. Its doors opened. People became agitated. Many surged towards the train. As the people moved, she saw the umbrellas from the rooftop swoop down and closely cover them. The large umbrellas encumbered most of the would-be passengers, preventing them from approaching the open doors. Handfuls of people, mostly covered by the smaller white umbrellas and a few of the gray ones, managed to duck down and squeeze between the occluded doorways. The train doors closed, and the white and gray umbrellas fell to the ground. The unfilled train departed. Those at the platform edge looked unhappy and restless. The umbrellas swooped back up again, resting in the night sky, filtering the moonlight. "What just happened?" she asked an older man standing next to her. "We're still too covered," he complained. "It takes time, but eventually we'll get on the train, I promise." He looked upwards, gesturing to a baby blue umbrella of moderate size. There were stripes of white interspersed among the blue. "I'm getting there." "What about me?" she asked. "I'm so confused." "Try to get on the next train," he suggested. "I can't tell just by looking at you what your cover looks like." He shuffled off and took a seat on a long bench. She looked around. There were a lot of people here. She looked for a clock to figure out what time it was, but there was no clock. She looked for an exit, but there was no sign of an exit. Just a multitude of people, anxious for the next train. There was a sound of another train approaching. The lights at the platform edge again turned red. As before, people surged forward. The umbrellas descended in force like a flock of hungry birds sensing grain scattered on the ground. She began to move forward, thinking she would simply walk on the train. But as she moved, a large multicolored umbrella flew down and settled right above her head. It covered her, keeping her from navigating between the people around her. Its circumference was significant. It retarded her motion so much that she ended up unable to move in any direction. She could hardly see, much less move. She heard the train doors close and several umbrellas fall to the floor. As the train departed, her own umbrella flew back up into the air, rejoining the other ones. A little man and an even smaller woman came along and picked up the white and gray umbrellas that had fallen. They placed the umbrellas in a black bin mounted on wheels. "Excuse me," she asked as she approached the tiny woman. The woman looked up. Her eyes had no irises. They were completely white. She had so many questions that she couldn't be shocked for long. "What is the deal with the umbrellas?" she asked. The woman looked directly at the umbrella that had covered her. "They're pretty, yes, all those pretty umbrellas, filtering the light. Yours is still big and bright. You'll be here a while." "What do you mean?" she asked. "You just got here?" "Yes." "They're holding on to you," the woman nodded. "You were very loved. Well, to be more accurate, many of the people around you want to appear loving. They love receiving sympathy now, even though they didn't know you. Adulation by proxy. It's an emotional prize. That sort of holding on to you can go on for years, way past the natural time ordained for such things." "I still don't understand." The woman was eager to get back to her work. "You had a lot of those new relationships," she asked, "those computer things?" She moved her hands as she spoke, as if she was working on a computer keyboard. Cessna noted that the woman's fingers had no fingernails. "I was connected to quite a few people," she admitted. "Family and real relationships are okay. They usually fade as appropriate. People who really knew you, they know how to let go, eventually," she said. She had no teeth, either. "To get on the train, you don't have to have no umbrella. Just a basic one will suffice, representing the real memories. A simple white umbrella. All those fake relationships gone. Or, if there are no memories, no one who remembers you, a gray one. The gray ones usually get on board quickly. It's both happy and sad." Cessna asked, "I still don't understand." "The colors," the woman said, "in the umbrellas. They represent how many hold on to you in perpetuity. The ties must be untied from the dock for the boat to sail, right? But there are so many connections now. That's the thing with networks that persist in perpetuity. You can stay on the platform a long time while those ties are being disconnected. A very long time." She picked up a armful of gray umbrellas and moved along as she cradled them. "But I don't want to be here a long time," Cessna replied. "I want to get on that train and get out of here. Or boat, since you mention it. I just want to leave." With any exit seemingly blocked by a sea of people, getting on the train was now the only obvious way off the platform. A little ping pricked at her spine. Cessna looked up. There was a sliver of white in her umbrella. "There, there," the woman comforted. "At least one person has let you go, accepted your journey." "Still quite a few left, though. Yep, you'll be here a while. Pretty girl like you, you must have had thousands of virtual friends." "I can't get on the train until my umbrella is small and white," Cessna asked, still not sure how or why she was here. It did suddenly occur to her that she had not been hungry or thirsty since arriving at the platform, and she had no need to visit a restroom, nor did she feel tired. She heard the jazz band begin to play again. "That's the way it works," the tiny woman with no irises, fingernails, or teeth replied. "And I can't do anything about it?" "Nope. It's all in their hands. Trust me, this sort of bedlam," the woman motioned around the platform, teeming with people, "never happened in centuries past, save for a handful of famous folk. But that's the problem with your time. You're all celebrities now." "But I just want to get on that train," Cessna said, watching her beautiful umbrella descend as the next train entered the station. It covered her, restricting her sight and her movement. "Should have thought about that before you made yourself so popular," the woman said. The woman bent down to pick up more white and gray umbrellas as her umbrella reascended. She looked up at her umbrella, large and replete with vibrant colors. She found herself focusing on the sliver of white in its fabric. When the next train entered the station, she didn't even bother to move towards it. She knew she was going to be here a very long time.
What a multifaceted story, Laura. That was wonderful. Thank you. How long did it take you to come up with that? There are so many out-of-the-box ideas in it.
Well, it was interesting. The actual inspiration for that was I was on a social network site, and I got a friend request from somebody who I knew was dead, that they had passed. And yet here was this machine sending me a friend request. And I thought,
was it the machine?
Or was it? And I thought, you know, how do those connections that bind this world and the next work now that we all have these electronic tethers to one another? And the concept of the umbrellas and the seeing occurred to me. So I just kind of sat down and wrote it. A lot of times it's a very organic process. I'll just sit down and have an idea and start writing. Or it could be just a title, or it could be something. It could be a misheard song lyric.
Wow.
Yeah. So
your mind is fertile ground.
It is. But, you know, we all have minds like that. We just don't get the opportunity, I think, to really express that in.
Well, my friends, if you're enjoying Laura's stories and the other stories we're playing and the stories we bring you each and every week, you've got a few more minutes to call 713-526-5738 and make a generous donation. We would greatly appreciate it. Or you can go to kpft.org and select So What's Your Story as the program you'd like to support and support us that way. Now, Hank, you know, we also love the wit and wisdom of folk tales. And we have a story by your friend Maxine Lennon, who was one of the very first guests on this show when we became a weekly program.
That's right. She was the first guest on June 3rd, 2013, I think it was. And she was pretty spectacular. And she illustrates the beauty of a folktale. And this is something that you're going to want to hear. But we also want to thank Michael Winters, our very, very good friend, for his generous donation, and Leslie Butcher. All I can say is that we love you guys. We have plenty of time to keep those calls coming in.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
And while you're dialing, we will be playing Maxine's story for you.
Called The Bookbinder.
As we take our last breath, in through the window, shrouded in mist, yet still we can see him, with gold-rimmed glasses, and looking like the shadows of the earth and the eons of numbers and figures flow across his body, comes the bookbinder. He puts his hand to our mouth, and he captures that last breath. And in that last breath are all our stories and all the pictures of our life. Beside our bed appears a stream, a ream of papers. And gradually all the colors and all the stories fall from out of the air and fall onto those pages. And as he puts them together, he sits with us, and we keep talking to him and whispering in that very last breath, and everything comes in that last breath. And as he gathers them, he begins to sew them together. Some in leather, some in satin, some in silk, and he puts them together in a beautifully bound book. And then in the distance, very, very distant from us, we can hear a child giggling. And we ask him, "What's that?" And the bookbinder says, "Well, that's the child that's waiting for your book that will be their guide." And at that, we smile, and our soul leaves our body, and the bookbinder takes us very gently by the hand, and we leave through the window that is always left open.
That's such a beautiful story. I've heard that several times. And something very unique about all stories, especially folktales, is that they're convoluted.
Wow. Well, thank you, Maxine, for that. And, Laura, you know, we're wrapping up our hour, but I want to ask you, do you have a website where people can find your work?
I do. My website is www.laurajcampbell.com, and I can be found on Facebook at Laura J. Campbell. And please go over and give that a like. I thank you.
Well, let's give that website one more time. What's your website?
www.laurajcampbell.com.
And if you didn't have a chance to write that down, all you got to do is go to our Facebook page, and we will have that for you before the evening is out. We will have that. Now, Hank, do we have anyone else to thank?
We have Robert Keith. We have Leslie Butcher. I'm going through the names tonight. We have Michael Winters. And we have Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous. I just want to give everybody credit. And
we also have
Mary, and we have Neil Early. And I understand we've got a few other people coming in, because I can sense those calls ringing.
Well, friends, you have really come through for us tonight, and we appreciate it, because it does matter, because it's the only way. You know, we don't have the typical ratings. This is how Pacifica knows that this is a program you'd like to support. And
that's right.
Your support is what took us from a early morning and then a late night half hour program to a prime time hour program.
Right. You got me out of the doghouse at 6 a.m. on a Monday. That's all I can say.
Oh,
I love it.
I can't even imagine.
Yes. And this is the kind of thing, you know, Laura's stories tonight, for example, is really representative of the kind of magnificent talent we have in the city as well. And this is, in my judgment, I know, Greg, you agree with this, that our program is really the epitome of community programming. It's community radio incarnate. We've got people coming here, telling their stories, sharing their thoughts and ideas, and connecting.
I mean, it's amazing that in the 10 years, we have had hundreds and hundreds of guests on here to share their stories.
Laura, this is your first time on here. What are your thoughts?
This is awesome, and I just want to thank you for providing a platform for people to tell their stories.
Yes.
And it's awesome because
and thank you for the $2,000 that you're throwing down. I mean, we loved having you here, but you don't have to be that generous. Really
that is a joke. That is a joke, my friends.
It is.
And Laura, while this is your first time here, it absolutely will not be your last.
Oh,
I hope.
Yeah.
I hope we have you on here again.
No, we get everybody coming back. Everybody coming back.
It would
back.
Be a pleasure. I would be honored.
Well, friends, don't you dare move, because Lars is up next. One of my favorite people on air and off. With a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us each and every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories and creating great stories, and we will keep bringing them to you. This is Greg Audell. And along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.